Could I reframe that question a little bit as to what makes us a public institution? If what makes us a public institution is only who provides us funding, then we probably passed out of being a public institution a long time ago. But that's not what I think makes us public. I don't think it's just where the money comes from. The truth is, many private universities get a huge amount of money from the federal government, and they never describe themselves as being public. So what makes us public? One of the things that makes us public is our mission. And I think Mr. Jefferson would be very disappointed in us if we ever gave up that mission. We have a special mission to the citizenry in general, and that's partly through our education mission. It's partly through our healthcare mission. Don't forget that we're major healthcare providers in Virginia, too. So we are public in our mission. We are public in our governance. This summer, I went to Harvard to their boot camp for new university presidents. Really interesting experience. And so one morning was devoted to working with your governing board. And so a president of a private university came in and he said, well, the first thing you have to do is be careful about who you pick for your governing board. And I didn't work in a public institution, you know? In this state, the governor picks the Board of Visitors. In Michigan, where I used to be, the people elect the board of the University of Michigan. But the one thing that's for sure is that the president of a public university does not pick the board. So the second thing this private university president said, the next thing you have to remember is that before every board meeting, you've got to sit down with three or four board members and talk about how the meeting's going to go. Can't do that in a public university. There's an Open Meeting Act. We can't have more than two visitors together in one room at one time unless we've posted it as a meeting. In a private university, faculty members and administrators can exchange any amount of correspondence on any subject with anybody, and the public can never discover it. Here, because of strong Freedom of Information Act regulations, that's not true. The business of the university is open to the public. So all those things are ways in which we are fundamentally different from private institutions that don't really have very much to do with the money. It's not just a matter of the money. Of course, I wish the Commonwealth would fund us better. I think the miracle is how well Virginia has done with relatively meager funding. And, you know, on the wall in Carr's Hill in my home, there's a letter written by Thomas Jefferson decrying how little funding the university is getting from the General Assembly. Some things never change. But thank you for the question. It's an important issue for us to think about. Yes. Well, for a variety of reasons, I do not anticipate at this time doing a whole lot of additional building. One of the things President Castine did was to renew the physical plant in really good ways. We do have two laboratory buildings that will be coming online, and those are really important because lab space is a place where we have had a bottleneck. But I don't anticipate you're seeing a whole lot of additional building being done. There is one building project, however, that I'm very passionate about and that I do want to get underway. We must restore the rotunda. Thank you. Those black shrouds at the top of the columns are keeping the marble from falling down on people underneath. The marble that was used has done what architects call sugarize, which means it's turned into granules like sugar. And that wonderfully valuable building, part of the UNESCO World Heritage Site, is in great danger. The roof also badly needs to be repaired. I'm told by the university architect that it's a $50 million project. But for the people who love this university and who love the original academical village, I think we can raise that money. So that is one thing that I want to do simply in the interest of retaining what we've got. In terms of other kinds of growth, we probably will add a little bit more in the way of student body, but but probably not to the college. I have talked with some other deans who would like to expand their entering class. There will be a new residence hall that will be opening up next fall. And so there would probably be some modest increase. I tell you candidly, if we do not do this, the political pressure building up from Northern Virginia on the General Assembly will be irresistible, and we won't like what happens next. I have been in Texas, where the same kind of pressure built up on the University of Texas, and the result was not a happy one. And so I would rather have very small, contained growth than to have a mandate come to us that we wouldn't like at all. So that's where I am right now. Now remember, I've been on grounds 5 weeks. Plans could change. Yes, way back in the back. Okay. One of the great things about UVA is that it is truly an international in its reach. I think many of you will find when you travel abroad, if you wear something that's an identifiable Cavalier emblem, people will come up to you and they will recognize you and say something. International alumni are enormously beneficial to us in lots of ways, you know, particularly if they keep close relationships with us. They can send wonderful students here. They can help us find great internship opportunities for our students in their country. They can often lead to interesting research collaborations with universities we might not otherwise have had. I have found that, you know, in my own scholarly career, my PhD students who have gone to other countries have been able to open up all kinds of interesting doors for research that we could not have otherwise opened. So I think that for the long run, we don't even understand yet how many benefits there are going to be. Remember, only 20 years ago, there were only about 500 international students. So the benefits to us are coming in the future. And those of you now who are students here in residence, your connections to the university in the future will help to make this an even richer experience for the next generation of students. That's a very interesting question. You know, certainly in terms of free speech, particularly in his day, the very hot issue of free exercise of religion, I think that he would have been impressed with the strength today of the commitment to that. He might also be dismayed by the forces allied against it in some parts of the country. But I think on balance, he would be happy with how we had dealt with that very important issue that he and James Madison both wrestled with quite a lot in their earlier years here in Virginia. I don't think the concept of academic freedom was understood in his day in anything like the way it is today. But certainly in terms of the way the original faculty were hired and the kinds of instructions they were given, there didn't appear to be much going on in the way of censorship. So I think he would have been pretty happy with how we handle it. I hope so, anyway. Yes. We play a major role now in Southwest Virginia, an area which is economically underdeveloped and in desperate need now of new economic sustainability. Partly we play this role through our college at Wise, which provides terrific educational opportunities to students who otherwise would not have anything close to home. We also offer courses in Abingdon in the Southwest Education Center there. And we devote a considerable amount of economic development assistance in Southwest Virginia through a variety of mechanisms. In addition, our medical school also runs clinics throughout Southwest Virginia. And this is valuable for them because they're underserved medically, but it's also valuable for our students. So those are some of the ways that I see us engaged with that particular region. Of course, here where we live, we can't help but have a big impact. We're such a large part of this community. One of the things I'm proudest of is that every week, 3,300 hours of service is delivered by our students just through Madison House. And I know that many of the rest of you are also doing service through other mechanisms. The positive impact that has on a community is just about impossible to measure, particularly in this time when taxpayer funds for social services and educational services is declining. I think it's a pretty big impact. Yes. Right. I'm not sure it's totally antithetical to the idea of quantification, but I think that most educated people understand that the liberal arts provides a door that opens onto many fields. That training yourself in the disciplines that were required traditionally in the liberal arts is really essential for making progress in any kind of academic discipline. So I'm thinking about things like a close attention to a text, an ability to follow a narrative, visual literacy, the choice of words and the understanding of words and syntax, not just in English, but in other languages as well. An appreciation for how people in different cultures and different societies have organized themselves and even organized their thinking. These are all things that make you a much broader and a more intellectually agile person. My own training was a solid liberal arts education. My two sons have received the same kind of education. And ultimately, I do think it's a very practical thing. The Department of Labor tells us that most Americans will change occupations, not jobs, occupations, at least 3 times in their work career. They'll change employers between 7 and 10 times. It's not reasonable that we today will be able to prepare you technically in every possible job that's about to open up. You know, as it is now, we have many graduates who can't explain to their parents what it is they do because the job didn't exist when their parents were of the same age. That pace of change is not likely to slow down. If anything, it's likely to increase. So the best thing we can do is to make you intellectually resilient. Because, you know, many occupations that we have today potentially could be automated out of existence. And then those workers will need to turn to do something else. And the liberal arts is one of those ways that you get prepared to think about the human experience more broadly, which includes what that everything else might possibly include. Yes. Right. Well, that's a very difficult issue for us, obviously. It's not such a difficult issue for some other Virginia schools. It was actually an issue for only one school in Michigan, too, I have to tell you. There's no question that this institution attracts a wide variety of applicants from around the world. And it's astonishing the quality of the students that we turn away, let alone the ones that we let in. Could we increase our quality profile if we didn't make a special effort to admit 70% of the class from among the residents in Virginia? You know, possibly we could, but we go back to that public function. We may feel that the General Assembly doesn't invest enough in us now, but there's quite a physical plant here that they've invested in over almost 200 years now. And so that probably does justify their wishing to keep the lion's share of the seats for their own constituents. Having said that, I do believe in general that the best universities in the country are the ones that have the least legislative regulation, because the legislators are not in a position to be able to decide as well as we can here how things should be ordered. Famously, the University of Michigan has constitutional autonomy, and that served them very well. They have maintained a very high quality profile with a student body about twice as large as the one here. Similarly, the University of California, although increasingly the California Assembly is trying to regulate them, flourished under relatively minimal regulation and created 8 of the real flagship universities of the country, all of them in one system in one state. And I'm very concerned, by the way, that California is on the road to dismantling that wonderful system. So in general, I think less regulation is better for universities, but there are 140 elected people in Richmond who might not agree with me about that. Yes, sir. Well, I agree with you. You know, when I talk to a parent, one of the things I have to talk about is, what's the value of coming here for 4 years, which is quite expensive, because you've got to pay for room and board, as well as paying for your tuition, your books, and so on. Why should you make that investment, as opposed to, saying, going upstairs to your bedroom and going to the University of Phoenix on your computer for 4 years, right? Well, I think one of the reasons for that, now, there are a lot of reasons for it. Actually, all of you are one of the most important reasons, because 24/7, you get to be with some of the smartest people in the United States. That's a pretty good value. But beyond that, the research is one of the things that makes a research university so different from the average four-year school. So, you know, if I were teaching at the University of Phoenix, I wouldn't even get to design my course. They would give me my course. It was designed by somebody else. They would tell me what books I had to use, and basically I would be highly programmed in terms of what I had to do online with my students. It's completely different here, and so if I am a researcher here, I can bring the excitement into the classroom of what I've discovered 5 minutes after I left the laboratory. Even better, I can bring you in the laboratory with me and have you find out what that excitement is like. Now, that's one of the great things about having undergraduates work in research. I mentioned that there's going to be a research competition as part of the inauguration ceremonies in April. Well, one division of that will be undergraduate research, and there will be prizes. There'll also be a division for graduate students and a division for faculty. Because I think it's so important that we ought to showcase it. And one of the best occasions to showcase it is going to be these celebrations, which don't occur that often in the life of a university, and give us a chance to celebrate everything about us that is wonderful to talk about. So we are looking to have a research competition that will give many undergraduate researchers an opportunity to show off what they've done and maybe win a prize for it, too. Yes? Well, setting aside the dichotomy between being true to Jefferson and being liberal, because I believe in Jefferson's day, he was considered not just liberal, he was considered really radical, in part for his support of the French Revolution. The more general question of how I philosophically approach my duties as an administrator is this. I'm the principal servant of the University of Virginia. My most important job is to be a very good steward of what is here. And being a steward does imply a certain amount of conservatism. It means saving what is good here so it can be passed on to another generation. Because my responsibility isn't just to you. It's also to your children and your grandchildren and to the generations after that that come to the university. So in that sense, would I be conservative? Yes. But in the sense of would I welcome new ideas, new ways of thinking, maybe even new subject matters, new disciplines? Would I be liberal in that way? Yes. Because universities above all are about innovation. We have to keep looking at what's new and good. We have to keep asking ourselves the questions about what's new and good, or we'll become stodgy and stale. We won't be an exciting place anymore. So, liberal, conservative, yeah, some of both. Two more questions, okay. I think it matters because each of you is going to go forth and be a citizen of a much larger community. And whatever we can do to prepare you best to take that on is good for the larger community. And governance in general is an issue in the United States right now. If you leave here prepared to be a better citizen because you have thought hard about what governance means, because you've made hard decisions about a peer, perhaps, because you've served in the honor committee or perhaps been in a jury. That is a wonderful gift that we give to the Commonwealth or wherever it is that you make your home after you leave here. I know that if for any reason I were to be tried by a jury of my peers, I would hope they were University of Virginia graduates. Yes. Yes, no question about that. We can't expand the number of students without expanding the number of faculty. And we need more faculty on grounds for a lot of reasons. Many of our faculty are of retirement age. If they all decided to retire at one time, we would be in a very serious situation. One of our bottlenecks has been that we haven't had the laboratory space. Now we're getting the laboratory space. Another bottleneck is that we don't have the money to equip those labs. I'm going to be looking for the money to equip those labs. Because I think what we need to do is to hire more faculty. There are so many wonderful new PhDs on the market right now. And because of the collapse of the economy in 2008, there's lots of really great PhDs who are looking for their first faculty position. I think that we could hire some really stellar, wonderful, wonderful faculty. Who would teach wonderful classes for you, who would bring you into exciting research, and who would enrich and enliven the departments they come to. So we would have to do that, and in my opinion, we would need to do that first.